Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax and I am still at the NALC convention. There was quite a bit of excitement today. Today is Wednesday and things have really picked up today in terms of interest, but that's not what we're here to talk about. I'm actually here because this is one of the cool things that grows out of the convention that I was kind of hoping would happen, but it's my first one. So the first day, Michael and I are at the meet and greet at 4:30 or when I think that was when it started. It doesn't matter. And we're meeting all these cool people, and it's amazing because, like, you just sit down at a table and say hi to somebody, and they're like, yeah, I'm the regional director of blah, blah, blah. And it was so cool, you know. For me, it was just a lackey. Like, it was amazing. And so we're talking to these people. We're getting all this advice and picking people's brains, and you know how I'm into that. And then I got a text message from somebody, and it was somebody really special to me. So let me describe the circumstances. Many moons ago on my podcast, I was talking about some problems that I was having. Problems with my branch, problems with a grievance. And I get an email, classesmail@gmail.com. And it's from a union officer. And that officer is reaching out to me from across the country to give me advice. And we email a little bit and he gives me his phone number. And he's like, dude, just give me a call. And I gave him a call and we talked for like 2 hours on the phone while I'm out delivering the mail. Don't tell my supervisor that I was on the phone while I was delivering the mail, but it was amazing. And it was like this beautiful moment of mentorship that came out of the podcast and it was so beautiful. So that is Sam and we're going to say hi to Sam right now. Hi, Sam.
What's up, Alan? How you doing today?
Dude, I'm doing fantastic, right?
Finally good to put the face to the name.
Yeah,
man,
that's the truth. Yeah, that has been great. Like, that's one of the funny things is when you're like, hey, I'm over by the entrance, come and find me, but I have no idea what you look like. And so I'm looking around like, who looks like they would listen to Classes of Mail? And yeah, obviously we found each other, and that was amazing. And then I have a second guest with me, and that is Greg Donaldson. Greg, say hello.
Hello, Greg. How are you doing?
There you go. And Greg, what is your position in the union?
I am the branch president for Branch 88 in Galesburg, Illinois.
Nice.
I am also the shop steward and formal A for the primary station there.
Ah, very nice. Good stuff. And I have seen you on the big screens today a couple of times fighting for what's right in this union. And
that has
been really cool.
I yield my time.
right, exactly, yeah. They're very, very Robert's Rules of you to yield back the balance of your time. Although in my reading at the beginning of the week, it's not required to yield back the balance of your time. And you cannot yield to anybody else either. But I'm sure you guys all listened to that episode on Sunday, so I'm not going to dwell on it too much. All right, so what's great about this, about having these guys here, is that Sam is actually Step B certified. So this is a guy who really knows this stuff and knows what's going on in the union. And so I get to ask my stupid questions that hopefully some of you guys have too, so that we can get more informed as carriers. So Sam, let me ask you, in your area where you practice, what are the most common discipline that carriers are receiving?
Definitely attendance. Failure to follow instructions, that sort of jazz.
Right. So attendance, it seems it's that way everywhere. Greg, would you say it's the same for you? Attendance is number one?
Attendance, and we had a rash earlier this year of FMLA-related discipline, which was hilariously bad.
All right, so we got a sidetrack already. How in the world do they issue discipline over FMLA?
They're basically using it as a different type of attendance discipline. I haven't personally seen it, but in Region 3, where I'm from,
okay,
it was a big deal up in the Chicago area. It's illegal, and if you ever get questioned regarding FMLA in an investigative interview, all you have to do is say, this was an FMLA-approved absence, and you should file a labor complaint over it.
Oh, dude, that's great. See, this is the kind of good stuff that we need. That's what this podcast is all about. All right, so attendance is a big deal everywhere, and you're saying this FMLA, that's also essentially attendance-related discipline. So let's get some expert advice here. So first of all, what do you, Sam, wish the carriers knew about attendance-related discipline?
Really, the big thing for me is just the documentation portion of it. Like, okay, most people, they just call out, they think, oh, okay, the ERMS or the call out 1-800 number. Like, quite honestly, the 3971 is key.
How important is it that carriers fill out their own 3971?
It is very important. Never, Why? Ever, ever, ever fill out a computer-generated 3971.
Why is it important?
Nine times out of ten, you'll see on the remarks section things that aren't appropriate, like deems desirable, restricted sick leave, mm-hmm. non-FMLA. So let's say you sign one of those and it says that you're on restricted sick leave. There are certain policies and guidelines that management has to follow.
Right, like they have to give you written notice that they put you on restricted sick leave.
So by you signing that document, you basically admitted that you're on restricted sick leave.
Oh my God. Dude, what a great point. So it prevents management from conducting those kind of shenanigans.
Yep.
All right, so that's number one, that they should fill out their own 3971, or that's documentation. What about medical documentation?
Not needed for absences three or less.
That's what I'm talking about. So when I go in for investigative interviews with my carriers, it's a standard question in the II that in the investigative interview that they say, did you provide any documentation for these absences? And generally, I'll have my carriers say, I don't have to provide documentation, and I was never asked for any documentation. So that way, you know, it's like, why are they even asking about this? Because it's not required, exactly to your point, for illness. Absences of 3 days or less. So if a carrier has documentation, well, let's say they actually go to the doctor because they're sick and they bring that in, does that make a difference?
The manager will issue the discipline or the PDI if they want to. It's their discretion.
It does seem that way, yeah.
To be honest, it's more of like, it's whether or not you want to protect yourself all the way. Mm-hmm. Definitely 3971. But if you did go to the doctor or primary care physician, whatever, and you have it, you know, just make a copy of it.
Hey, might give as it well to your supervisor. There's no downside.
And right. then in the PDI, obviously, hey, I gave it to you, or I gave it to Supervisor X.
Right.
And
yeah, I've used that to make the argument that they didn't do a thorough investigation. Because exactly. they ask about discipline, or I mean about documentation. There is documentation, and then they don't even put it in their file.
Exactly.
You know, so yeah, they obviously weren't thorough. All right, so that's what carriers should know, is documentation. And again, to reiterate, what you're saying for documentation is they need to fill out their own 3971.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what do you wish that stewards, like informally stewards, knew about attendance discipline?
First things first, definitely do a PDI consult.
Yeah, like before you go in for the PDI, for the pre-disciplinary interview, you want to talk to the carrier.
Yeah. Right. You know, management has an obligation to let you know what the PDI or II is about. Mm-hmm. So you get the dates, and then you just confirm with the carrier, hey, are these accurate? You know, right. and nine times out of ten, they'll tell you yes or no if they're accurate or, no, I was here. You know, right. a lot of times management is such in a rush to issue discipline that they'll include dates that you were here.
Absolutely, that happens, which is why on the steward side, like as little as I do know that you want to make sure you pull the clock rings for those days and make sure they were actually absent on those days. Mm-hmm. All right. So, Greg, what about you? What do you say for carriers?
For carriers, the PDI consult is huge. I mean, I've heard multiple people talk about this, but if you don't know something they're talking about, some ELM provision, just say so. That will protect you more than yes. any excuse you might have for illness. And be thorough when they're asking, what was the illness? I would say be uncomfortably so.
I agree. It gives you more to work with. If you just say, I'm sick, you know, it can almost come across because there's no way to get tone when you're recording those answers. So if you just say, I was sick, it could come across as, oh, I was sick. But if you, you know, it's come across snotty even. But if you say, like, I was on the toilet with diarrhea and ain't no way I could have sat in that LLV seat without destroying it, that carries more weight. It really does. Or in the ELM, or maybe it's the M39. At this point, the reading has made my head explode. But it says that, like, it talks about infectious disease, you know, and you should not come to work with infectious disease. So I tell the carrier, like, if you have flu or anything else that you think is infectious, say so, because that will specifically fall under these provisions. What's your guys' position on dependent care? Like, how much, like, so it says you get 10 days of dependent care, but it's not like it makes them more excused absences, right? So what's your take on that?
I mean, if your kid's sick with an infectious disease, you would clearly qualify under those specific provisions.
Right.
And I know, check your local state laws. In Illinois, you can't have a child under 14 left alone. So it becomes a literal legal issue, at least in Illinois.
That is so interesting.
For dependent care. And if management tries to discipline you for following the law, I don't I've never been to Step
beautiful.
B.
That's beautiful.
I don't know how far that will go at Step B, but it'll be a great mitigating factor. Yeah, my kid, I can't leave him alone. I'm a single parent.
So we get, my supervision will say explicitly, like, if you need childcare, that's not a valid excuse. That childcare does not count for leave. What's your guys' position on that?
So I'm a little bit, you're going to hate me, but being management devil's advocate.
Yeah.
And simply because I did file one recently, too. Unfortunately, dependent care is not protected.
Right.
So, yeah, you have 80 hours of dependent care.
Right.
However, you're still susceptible to the discipline procedure.
That's exactly right. And that's what I tell my carers as well. It's not like FMLA.
Mm-mm.
Right. If you have a kid who's sick all the time, get FMLA.
Definitely.
And then you're covered. But yeah, just dependent care alone is not the same thing.
Now, if you have a good enough steward, I guess, that can make that argument for you, then, you know, great. But it's going to be a hard win.
Right. Well, the language in the manuals is it's as if you were sick with the same thing, you know. And so that's essentially the standard that we have to meet. But yeah, you don't just get 10 free days of leave because you have kids. Okay, so that's attendance. The other one that Sam said was a frequent source of discipline is failure to follow instructions.
Yeah.
So be more specific with that. What kind of instructions?
Well, that's the thing. You can't be specific with it because it's a blanket policy.
Right.
Failure to follow instructions isn't a charge. There's
okay.
nothing in the handbooks that says this is what happens if you fail to follow instructions. What was the instruction?
Right.
So,
is it a valid instruction?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if the management person is telling you jump on one foot and you say no and they give you a discipline for failure to follow instructions,
right.
is that a reasonable rule?
Right.
So there's ways to poke holes at it. As long as management does a specific charge, they will always fail.
Right.
And even then, 115, I think 3 of the M39 requires management to do everything in their power before issuing
discipline. To correct the issue.
So
right.
if the person isn't following the instruction, where is management's investigation about, okay, what could I have done differently
right.
to make sure they're following the instructions? Were my instructions not clear? Were they conflicting?
Conflicting. You mean like I want you to deliver all the mail and be done by 4 o'clock?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And to tie it in with the attendance previously, I mean, management does have a certain thing that they have to do before they issue attendance discipline.
Right.
They have to put you on restricted sick leave. They have to give you attendance reviews. They
That's
have
right.
to, you know, put you on check. Deems desirable is just two words off of an arbitration site.
Right.
It means nothing. So if you get a deems desirable or welcome back, which you should not sign,
yeah.
you know, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Management still has a process that they have to follow before they issue a corrective discipline. Anything prior to that is always going to be punitive.
That's a good call. That's excellent advice for stewards. And I just want to double down on something that you guys said earlier about when you're in that investigative interview and management says, per the ELM 665.13 or whatever, you are supposed to be honest and all, you know, in your investigation. How do you tell carriers to respond to that? We'll start with Greg.
So the first thing is, like I said before, if they didn't know about that specific ELM provision,
right.
yeah, it makes sense they're going to be honest with it. But saying, oh, I didn't know about this specific ELM provision.
Right.
And saying that and being honest is something I always suggest carriers do.
Without question.
Because if you start lying during it and it goes to arbitration and then management's advocate gets a hold of you, it will come out that you lied.
Right. I always tell my carriers, like, dude, I'm not a very good steward yet, so I may be able to defend you for these absences, but I can't defend you for the absences and for lying. I'm not good enough to do that.
I have a different approach.
Okay.
Some people might find it a little weird that I do it that way, but I'm more of a, I did my consultation with you. We're going to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
X, Y, Z. Cool.
Right.
Management comes in. Are you aware? I'd advise you not to answer.
Right.
The PDI has to be objective and thorough. You cannot have leading and accusatory questions.
Right.
By stating, are you aware,
if
you're already leading him into a sense of security,
so,
a false sense of security.
All right, this is something that I need to know personally because we get those all the time. In fact, they'll say, you are aware
mm-hmm.
that you have to X, Y, Z, correct?
That's a leading and accusatory
okay,
question.
Okay, so what do I do about that as a steward?
Object. I would advise the grievant not to answer. Call the caucus if you need to step outside with them
right.
and talk to them, the grievant. or just in front of the supervisor, advising not to answer.
So I do object, right? Yeah. And this is where I need the advice. So I say, yes, I object to this question because it's leading. This is my problem with it. And I give the supervisor a chance to change the question if they want to. And then when they don't change the question, usually they say, well, this is my investigative interview. I'm going to ask it however I want. When they ask it again, I tell the – so this is, would be new part to me. I tell the carrier, don't answer the question.
Never tell them don't. I advise you not to answer
the question.
Because we can't answer for them.
No, that's true. Yeah, yeah. Right. And that would be like giving them a direct instruction. Exactly. Dude, great advice. This is why I need this stuff. Okay. So I tell them, I advise you not to answer. And then let's say they take my advice and they say, I'm not going to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Does it just stay blank now?
No, it's their right. The supervisor has one of two choices. Either they could end the PDI and just be upset, or they continue with the PDI and just jot down that the steward advised them not to answer.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, it's their investigation.
Right.
In a perfect world, they would rephrase their question so it's not accusatory and leading. But unfortunately, they won't, and they'll be upset, and they'll huff and puff, and they'll just write steward advised not to answer.
Interesting. So how does that play out once it's time to file a grievance? Or once they issue the discipline, and now we have this investigative interview as part of the discipline, how does that play out?
Depending on how it went in the PDI. Let's use the same
scenario. Let's say that it just stays blank. You know, or it says the steward advised not to answer.
For a regular attendance discipline?
Yeah, okay. That'll be an example.
So depending on what happened in the PDI, let's say Supervisor X got all upset because I advised the grievant not to answer.
Right.
And he says, you cannot answer for him. You need to be quiet.
That's down. Obviously something way above and beyond. Right.
So now you have a wine garden violation, which is a due process violation, okay. So you just get a nice statement from the grievant that, you know, while you were in the PDI, you were instructed to be quiet.
Right, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying you now have this investigative interview and that portion of just, you know, there's no answer from the carrier. How do you use that then when it's time to grieve the discipline? Great, go ahead.
So... clearly, in this case, the supervisor didn't do a thorough investigation. They didn't actually get the question answered. They just wrote down the steward advised not to answer.
All they wanted to do was make accusation rather than actually get what was going on. Oh, I love it. Dude, that's exactly right. Yeah, because that's the point of the accusatory question. Is they're using it not to get an information, but to make an accusation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude, that's beautiful. Oh, you guys are so smart. that's great. Okay.
The other thing I found helped a lot with attendance discipline is interview the issuing supervisor. The issuing supervisor's opinion with attendance that discipline is warranted.
Right.
Ask them, why aren't they on restricted sick leave?
Yep.
That they're supposed to do everything. Restricted sick leave is part of everything.
Right.
And if they say, I didn't feel they were abusing it, well, then why did you issue discipline?
Right. Yeah, one of the questions I found, even in my limited experience, that's worked really well is, do you have evidence that this carrier is abusing their sick leave?
9 times out of 10, they don't.
Yeah, of course. The answer to that is no. Well, if they're not abusing it, if they're using it for the purpose for which it's intended, then what's the discipline about? All right, so that's attendance and then failure to follow instructions. Let's get back into that. What are some of the instructions that they're failing to follow? Just pick one off your head.
A failure to follow instruction, parcel integrity.
Parcel integrity.
The scanning
integrity. So like they scanned it not at the location?
It could be a whole bunch of things. It could be a scan not at the location. It could be the load truck feature.
Missed scan.
Okay. Missed scan. Stuff like that.
So it is like really vague.
Yeah.
You know, some of these things make me feel so lucky to be at the station that I'm at, where we have this one great supervisor, but she's going to retire at like the end of September, and then, dude, all hell is going to break loose. So I got to be ready. Mm-hmm. I got to be ready. All right. So that's failure to follow instruction. Let me ask you this, because this podcast in many ways is aimed at CCAs and helping them and helping people who don't know all of their rights. When a supervisor tells you, hey, I need you to get all this done by 5 o'clock, and you say, well, I'm not going to be able to get it done by 5. I'm going to need till 6 o'clock to get it done. And so you tell them I'm going to be done at 6, and then you get done at 6. How often do either of you have to defend carriers for that, for just taking longer to do their route?
So I've never had to deal with that because my management is usually happy it got done. But my advice for a carrier, a CCA in that situation is I wouldn't argue with the supervisor. If the supervisor says, be done by 5, be done by 5. bring the mail back. You bring the mail back, yeah. And then have them give you the order to either approve the overtime. Even as a CCA, you still have to get approval for overtime. Right. Or you curtail the mail using a PS Form 1571 and have the supervisor sign it. If the supervisor refuses to sign it, ask for a steward.
All right, so hold it there because I want to get Sam's answer on this too. How often do you have to defend carriers for just taking longer than the supervisor wants?
Well, I haven't been blessed like Greg. That's honestly flavor of the day, honestly. Every day we have something like that where it's like a constant fight. But were they actually issued
discipline?
They will.
So I'm not talking about – so let's make a distinction here. Mm-hmm. Because we have unauthorized overtime where – I came back at 6 and I never told you that I was going to come back. But if I tell you, like if I rims at 2 o'clock and say, hey, I'm looking at 6 o'clock, are you there still getting?
Yes.
Oh, that's wild. So, all right, so how do you handle that as a
steward? So first and foremost, like the original question was, what advice would you give the CCA? So I would definitely, once you know that you're not going to make it get back in 8 hours, fill out a 3996.
Absolutely.
There's a form for everything in that post.
And hey, by the way, I think like the second episode of Classes of Mail is the 3996. Go back and give it a listen. All right.
So fill out your 3996. And that is not a hand to God, I will get done in the 59th minute. It's an estimate.
Right. If I could quote from Box K, estimated work. Yes.
So just make sure that the top part is filled out appropriately, your name, date, you know, all that good stuff. Right. And you list every reason as to why. If it's raining outside and you got a bum leg or you got over-referenced parcels or something like that, don't put over-referenced parcels because then they'll ask you, well, what's your base?
What's your reference, right?
You'll just be like, count them. You got 200 parcels. You got 7 trays of DPS. You got 3 trays of flats.
That's not a bad idea. In my 3996 episode, I tell you guys, don't always take my advice. It's not always perfect. You should barely take advice from me. But I say, like, if you know what your reference volume is, if I normally get 20 parcels and today I get 30, then I will put on my 3996 parcels 150% of reference. But yeah, if you don't know, then just put how many you have, and then management, if they want to, they can compare that to your reference volume and then try to make their argument. But ultimately, to your point, your reason is still your reason.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that reason is, that's what goes on that 3996.
Exactly.
All right, so continuing with that thought, with carriers going long.
So you go, you put in how much time you think you need. Let's say it's a really hot day, whatever. It's raining, like we said, the same scenario. A whole bunch of packages, a whole bunch of DPS, a whole bunch of flats, what have you. And it's going to take you 2.5 hours to finish.
Yep.
You in your head know that's going to take you 2.5 hours to finish.
Right.
But you don't know what's going to happen out there. So you just say 3 hours.
Okay.
Always overestimate rather than underestimate.
They'll be happy if you come in 15 minutes early, but maybe not 15 late, especially if it's a threshold. Exactly. Like if you go into V time, then that's a big deal. Right.
Then 9 times out of 10, they're going to look at it, have a heart attack, and say, no, I'm not going to approve 3 hours of overtime. So they'll give you a little back and forth. What time do you think? Always have a conversation with them.
Okay.
If they're starting to yell at you, just say, listen, give me a disposition on my 96 and always get a copy.
Always. Right. Okay, always. That's a good advice because in my head, I'm like, well, I've never really had conflict about this. But then once it finally happens and I don't have that copy and they changed it or they did whatever shenanigans they do, now I'm screwed.
Or you never got one.
Oh, no.
The classic excuse.
Dude. God, I have been so lucky with the supervisors I've had.
So let's say Supervisor X denies your 3-hour request and gives you 1.5 hours.
Right.
Obviously, it's impossible.
Yeah.
So depending on what office you work at, a lot of offices either have local policies or they have the unwritten rule.
Okay.
You know, just call back by that time or send a RIMS message.
Yeah.
In my opinion, RIMS messages are always the best because you could keep them for 15 days. Make sure you keep them for 15 days.
Right. You want to change it on the scanner. When it says 5 days at the end, delete that and make 15. I agree.
And that way, at least, if you have something on record within the 14 days of a grievance to ask for.
Right. And the request for information.
Yep. Exactly. So once that happens, you know, let's say you sent it out at 1:30, 2 o'clock,
okay.
Nobody comes back to you, you follow the original instruction on your 3996.
Right, which would be that hour and a half, and then you come back at the end of that time.
And you ask for further instruction.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. If they tell you, hey, do what you were ordered in the morning, yep. Okay, I'm going to need a 1571, please.
Right, exactly. And they have to sign it that they are authorizing you to delay that mail.
And make sure that you come back with enough time to actually fill out the 1571 and count everything. Because once they write it on the form as management, it's no longer an estimate. It's an order. So you have to be off the clock in that hour and a half of overtime.
That's a really good point, because anything over that is unauthorized overtime. Yeah, that's an excellent point. So you can't just come skating in right at the deadline. You got to get back 15 minutes ahead or whatever it's going to take you to get cleared and all squared away.
Exactly.
All right, so to get back to kind of what I want people to take away from this is Greg and me, we never have supervisors actually back up the pressure of, hey, you got to be done by 5 o'clock, because ultimately it takes you what it takes you. And on the street, if management wants to bust you for how long it's taking you to deliver the mail, they have to actually come out on the street and see you engaging in time-wasting practices or giving unsatisfactory effort. Mm-hmm. And they can't do that from behind their desk. Going over the 3996 is a separate issue, right? Because now we're talking about unauthorized overtime. Mm-hmm. So to me, the carrier's obligation is to be honest in their estimate. Mm. And if you're honest in the estimate and management doesn't like it, management can fuck off. They can not like it all they want. This is how long it's going to take you.
Now, when you're a vet, then you can say,
yeah, it's
okay,
easy for me to say. Right, easy
walk
for me to say. Yeah.
Walk me. If you don't believe right, me, walk right. me. But yeah. as a CCA, you know, you got to do what
you
got to
do. You don't like being walked. And it's tough when you're a CCA, right? And that's part of the mission of this podcast, is to empower them that, wait, I do know the rules now. And if I get walked, I don't have to be as nervous because I know the way I'm supposed to do the job. But yeah, the ones who are actually, I wouldn't say stealing time, but maybe taking their time out there, those are the ones who get real nervous when it's time to get walked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe not. Michael, you got something to add?
I do have something to add.
This is my running mate, Michael, running for president, Branch 2502. By the way, I give Michael my hearty endorsement for president of Branch 2502. Go get him, Michael. All right.
Go get him,
yeah,
Michael.
Come on in. What do you
all
got
right.
to say?
What I have to add is that what management does is in the morning at about 6 or 7 in the morning, depending on what time you start in the day, they have a management meeting. And so what happens is that when they do a meeting, they give out all the times to the postmaster, how long it's going to be for the whole station to get done by what time. And so they've already created a time for you before you show up to work. And that is the reason why when they go down the line and asking you for the times, they're basically telling you how much time is without even you telling them what time, how long it's going to be. So don't believe their bullshit. You think if you know how long you're going to take, you tell them how long it's going to take. They have no choice.
Right.
That is our form, the 96th of the part J that we got to fill out. That is our form to fill out, not management.
Right.
Even they can try to give you instructions and say that. Then you write there, my management giving me instructions to try to make this time. You can write that on there if you like. But my time is still this. Write that on
the
there. Okay.
Projection.
And then if management in the morning when you're casing and they give you some dumb instructions, and then you're doing something brand new, so it's taking you longer, then I put on their time-wasting instruction by a manager, okay?
Right.
So it is usually, it's management who causes you to take longer time, okay? And people don't need to worry about it, don't stress about it, because management's trying to get me to do this by this time. Who cares? You know, you tell them, like, it's 2 hours, and they tell you 1 hour, so they add 1 hour and 1 hour denied. Well, then you say, well, I need more clear instruction than that.
Right.
And if they said, well, mm-hmm. then you need to deliver all the mail. Well, then I can't do it by this time. Well, then you need to be done by this time.
That's a conflicting instruction.
So right. What's great about this is that now that we have the scanner, you can also message and say, hey, what? I noted that I have 2 hours, and I was given instructions for 1 hour. What do you want me to do? Now, there's some different stations that tells you to go ahead and deliver all of it. But, hey, I'm an asshole.
I think we all are.
I bring the mail back.
What I found from the culture of management is that the morning supervisors have to report to the postmaster that, hey, I'm only authorizing 12 hours of overtime today. Good job, me. But it's because of all the bullshit in the morning of, oh, don't put in a 3996, just call us at 2.
Yep.
And then at 2 o'clock, the closing supervisor has to put out all the fires
yep.
that were set by the opening supervisor, and we get stuck in the middle of it.
Exactly.
But if everybody comes back, okay, if they all denied it, and let's say they denied it on about 15 carriers, okay?
Yep.
Instead of reporting back saying when they're going to be back, they all come back. Fill another 96 for 30 minutes or more for every 96 because, you know, right. the driving time counts right. too.
Yeah, now you're talking.
And then now you got extra 6-8 hours of extra overtime, and then that evening manager will freak out, and they'll blame it on the morning managers, and then they all held Brexit on the next morning. Next thing you know, they're going to go, okay.
Which reminds me, if you're out on their street and for some reason they bring you a pivot piece, loop, yep. whatever you guys call it in your region.
It's a handoff. Just
handoff.
Saying. But there, yeah, auxiliary
relay,
assistance.
Relay, handoff.
Anyway. When you come back from the street, you can fill out another 96 mm-hmm. for that piece.
Yep. And you should.
You definitely should.
When we get it brought out, well, at least where I work, they give you the 3996 with the auxiliary assistance. That it comes with it, and it comes with either the carrier's estimate or management's authorization for overtime. Go ahead.
If you read the 3996.
Yeah.
The part where it says the numbers and all that,
yeah,
that's solely for the carrier that's performing the work.
Down at the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bottom of it. Yeah,
we're
absolutely.
The only ones that are doing it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're the only. So correct. If you get a 3996 that's pre-filled, ask for another one.
So what I will see, well, no, because on the top, in I think it's box N, there's two sides, one for approved overtime, the other one for approved auxiliary assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll say, like, approved 1 hour, 15 minutes of auxiliary assistance in that section that goes to the person doing the auxiliary assistance.
But that number that's in that box right. is the carrier who cased it, their estimate.
That's exactly right. Yep.
So if you want to cover yourself, fill out a 3996 with your estimate.
You know, Sam sounds like somebody who listened to my episode on the 3996.
I sure did.
Fantastic. All right. So, yeah, Greg, you want to give a go for
so,
it?
So a couple of things. First off, if management is filling anything outside of box K, notify your steward
mm-hmm.
or the couple boxes at the end where
yeah, I think route it's assessment. Box N actually, because K is strictly for carriers.
Yes. Yeah. Material yeah. document, I believe 1835 or 36, provides that management is supposed to follow the instructions on the back of the form,
right.
which clearly note they only get to mark certain sections.
That was actually the very first grievance I won.
As a, yeah.
All right, go ahead.
And then yeah. the other side, if you're ever getting conflicting instructions from management, tell your steward right away. Because the sooner we know there could be a potential problem, the sooner we can reach out and be like, hey, I've been here and you've been doing this thing. And if we start nosing around, management suddenly starts doing things right.
That is such great advice. Thank you so much for chiming in with that. It is way easier to fix a problem before it blows up. Because really, when you come back at 5 with all this mail, that's when it blows up.
Yep.
And now suddenly there's a fire that has to be put out. And that's way harder for a steward to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, we're in the right, but it's harder to put that fire out at that time. And that's a lot of... You guys brought this full circle so well. Because that's what... I can see you want to say something else.
No, go ahead.
That's what Classes of Mail is here for. To short circuit that process where management abuses you in the morning and disciplines you in the afternoon. If you know what your rights are, if you know what you're supposed to be doing, if you know what the rules are, then you are protected from all of this BS. Greg, you want to add something else?
Yeah,
go ahead.
And if you don't know what the rule is or you're thinking something's a little off, again, talk to your steward. Like, they're yep. there because they have the knowledge and the
That's
power
right.
to keep you safe.
Yeah, and if the steward tells you the wrong rule and then you get in trouble, well, the steward's the one who has to protect you from his own dumbass advice.
I would add one thing is
yeah, go ahead.
Always make copies of everything. And like mm-hmm. 96, 1571, mm-hmm.
right,
always
right.
make copies.
Yeah.
And like I've said it in the other podcast, always cover your ass. Do the see ya. Say goodbye to management because you covered your ass.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, this has been fantastic. I have needed to pick the brains of top-level stewards for the longest time. And Sam, man, months ago, I got so much help from you, and it was beautiful. And again today, you're the best, buddy. I really appreciate
it. You're cool, man.
Yeah. So
I'm glad to be here.
All right. So thanks for listening, everybody. And be safe. I will catch you guys next time.